I will consider doing that.
We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members, in your packet are a copy of the January 24th minutes. Representative Flanagan, you want to move those minutes?
So moved.
Representative Flanagan moves the minutes for January 24th, 2017. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The minutes are adopted. We're going to start off with Commissioner Lindsay. If you want to come to the table. Members, in your packet are the agency overview profile, some spreadsheets. Ms. Roberts, you want to walk us through the spreadsheet, please?
Madam Chair and members, you have two reports that I have generated. The first is from the budget system that's entitled BPAS Expenditures by Appropriation, November base. So this is the base level funding. And again, this is the report that we've been running for every agency that shows the expenditures by object code. And one thing I think, just since it may be a little confusing for members, you'll see on the first two pages that the different appropriations show zeros in the out years. And I think this would be a question probably the agency could clarify, but it looks like that there may have been some budget restructuring, and those expenditures in 16, 17, 18, and 19 are showing up later under operations.
Commissioner Lindsay, can you explain why that is?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, could I get a specific reference as it relates to?
If the page can give them a copy of the handout that we have, I think that would help. While she's doing that piece, Commissioner, when can we expect to receive your response to the letter that both Senator Kiffmeyer and I sent to your office in December?
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that Commissioner Frams from Management and Budget has been in conversation with you and then Senator Kiffmeyer, and that arrangements are being made to provide that information for all of the agencies which you identified within your letter.
Commissioner Lindsay, appreciate that. He said that he would be working with the agencies to get that data, so I assume that he has contacted you to get that data. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. Commissioner Frans and members of his office have contacted my staff as it relates to obtain information.
Okay. And Commissioner Lindsay, some of the agencies that have come before us already have provided some details in response to the questions that we've sent. We had the State Board of Investment here yesterday. They had done a pretty good job of filling out that information. So in your timetable with Commissioner Frans, when are you going to be providing that data?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd have to visit specifically with Commissioner Frans to be able to give you a definitive date, but I can get that information to you.
If you would, that'd be great. Thank you. And now, Commissioner Lindsay, I apologize. I was talking to you that whole time. Didn't get a chance for you to take a look at it. But in the handout, Ms. Roberts, you want to repeat the piece so he has a better idea?
Madam Chair, members, again, this is a standard report that's run out of the budget system that shows expenditures by appropriation. And I just wanted to point out to members that it looks like, you know, on the first two pages you have some appropriations that don't show any expenditures in the 16, 17, and 18, 19 biennium. And I thought it would be useful to have clarification if that's because those expenditures are now showing up in the operations portion, which is on the third page of the report.
Commissioner Lindsay.
Yep. Madam Chair, members of the committee, approximately about a year and a half ago, SMART took over operations as relates to the financial services which we provided. So this is consistent with the streamline and sort of the process that SMART uses.
Okay. Great. Ms. Roberts, any additional information that we need to highlight here?
Madam Chair, the other piece of paper that you have that I've generated is the transfers report from SWIFT. And again, you'll see, I think, the same kind of transfers you've seen from other agencies transferred to MMB for the statewide recruiter and to admin for the Office of Sustainability. So,
members, any questions? Uh, All right. Commissioner Lindsay, if you want to go through your handout here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to have an opportunity to discuss with you what has been going on within the Department of Human Rights. The Department of Human Rights really exists for democracy building and creating opportunities for all. The Act protects all individuals in Minnesota. It's sometimes a misconception that the Human Rights Act only allows protections or provides protections for a select number of individuals. But truly, when you look at the language within the Act and how we have been enforcing the Act, it applies for all Minnesotans, all individuals within the state. There may be some technical difficulties here. So while we work on getting the presentation for the folks that are in the audience up on the screen, I'm going to go through the handout. I believe all committee members have this handout, sort of the PowerPoint.
And there are copies of those in the back as well for the audience to receive.
So if you're following along on a paper PowerPoint presentation, it would be slide 3, that language there. It is the public policy of the state to secure for persons in the state freedom from discrimination. As such, discrimination threatens the rights, privileges of the inhabitants of the state to protect all persons from wholly unfounded charges of discrimination, opportunity to obtain employment, housing, public accommodations, public service, educational institutions, free from discrimination is a civil right. That's the language actually within Minnesota Statute 36302 from the legislature, defining the civil rights which are protected within the Human Rights Act. This is a very important law as it relates to ensure true opportunity for everyone in Minnesota, whether that is trying to pursue their dream of employment, starting a business, becoming educated, living where they choose to live within our state. The department has three primary duties identified within the Human Rights Act. There are actually 19 identified within 36386. But there are three which are identified as primary duties. The first is to investigate charges of discrimination. The second is to ensure equal employment opportunity and pay is provided to contractors fairly between women and men. And the third is to use education to reduce discrimination and disparate outcomes. I'd like to now go through with you those three primary duties. I think that they are the ones that most people, when they look at the Act, they think about the Department of Human Rights in those areas. The first is to investigate discrimination charges. As someone who has practiced law for 25 years and has been in the court and has actually tried cases, it's important that there is a process for those on both sides of the equation, for those who are coming there as the plaintiffs and those who are there as the defendants. And I have represented both plaintiffs and defendants within state and federal district court here in Minnesota. The Department of Human Rights, the inventory of the individuals who come before the department filing charges primarily are individuals who do not have access to attorneys, generally do not have financial wherewithal to be able to afford an attorney. The department really plays a critical function in ensuring those individuals have an opportunity to be heard. If the cases or if the department was not there, individuals would have the right to go before a court as a pro se litigant or as an individual who's unrepresented by an attorney. And the work that the department does for individuals who do not have cases to inform them do not, that frees up time from the court process. And to the extent that people do have valid claims, we're able to process those claims faster than the average time frame for completing a case. Currently in Ramsey and Hennepin County District Court, the attorneys and the trial court judge are urged to try and get a trial date within about 12 months. We investigate charges in less than 12 months. We're now sitting at about 290 days. We have been driving that number down from 432 days from the first day that I started as commissioner. Discrimination charges. Disability is the most common discrimination charge investigated by the Department of Human Rights. The case which is in your materials, the one concerning the access ability to get an accommodation for a loan, for a home mortgage, these are the type of cases that we see routinely within the department. Individuals with disabilities who are trying to fulfill their dream, fulfill their mission, fulfill their opportunity for education, housing, being denied because reasonable accommodations are not being afforded to them. In the case identified within the materials, the individual would have lost their home had not we had an opportunity to investigate and pursue that matter on their behalf. The most common area of discrimination charges, going to slide 6, that is an employment case. So again, we investigate cases in the area of education, in housing, in health care, but the most common area is employment discrimination charges. About 55 to 70% of the charges that we investigate are employment discrimination charges. Within your material, we talk about a case concerning Mr. Heinrichs within Alexandria. And again, the most common type of employment discrimination charge that we investigate are disability discrimination charges. In the Heinrichs matter, the individual was on a mission trip, was in an area in which they unfortunately came across an infection to his leg that resulted in the leg having to be amputated. He had been working as an IT professional. When he came back to work, he was then informed that his job duties substantially needed to be changed. Things which he did not need to do before, all of a sudden he had to make physical demands within the workplace to do that. So he had to crawl into various areas, had to get up on ladders and to move within duct work area. We found that those were efforts by the employer to try and motivate him to leave the employment at work. This is one in which we again came in, investigated the matter, sought to reach a settlement with the employer in the case, and fortunately we were able to reach a settlement agreement on behalf of Mr. Heinrichs in this particular dispute. Sexual harassment is still a problem. In the area of employment, after disability, we see a lot of cases as relates to gender. We also see cases as relates to race, and we also see cases as relates to age. The most common one after disability is gender. Race and age follow after that within the context of employment. Within the area of sexual harassment, what we find is that employers are not taking adequate steps to take proper remedial measures after discovering sexual harassment has occurred in the workforce. So in the Jack Links case is a prototype of an example of that type of situation in which the company comes, does an investigation, and then less than 2 weeks later they promote the harasser over the individual who had brought the initial claim, and therefore subjecting her again to a situation of unwanted sexual advances by the male individual there at work. The Billingham Farmers case, we put this one within just to inform you as it relates to the reach, again, of the Department of Human Rights. During my time as commissioner, we have investigated charges in 80 of the 87 counties within Minnesota. So there's very few counties in which we have not assisted to help individuals in the state of Minnesota. Age is one which we're starting to see more in the last 18 months within the Department of Human Rights. As people are seeking to extend their work careers, they are sometimes being forced by employers out of the workforce, and they're therefore coming to the department to allow them to finish their career on their terms. I talked real briefly as it relates to the drop of investigations of 290 days. We were sitting at 432 days when I started as commissioner in 2011. We had a very large inventory of older cases. That has been dropped by 70%. And then, I'm sorry, that's the number of cases that were older than a year. So the number of cases that were older than a year, we're approaching about 300 cases that were older than a year. We have now dropped that down into the mid-60s. The over inventory of cases, the overall inventory has dropped by 257. That is significant in the sense that the number of cases that are coming in are being investigated at the same pace that they're coming into the department. Employment opportunities and compensation opportunities. So for the department, we ensure that equal employment opportunities are provided when the state contracts over 100,000. This applies to any state department's agencies, and then four metropolitan agencies, the Sports Facility Authority, the Met Council, the Airports Commission, Mosquito Control Commission. In the last 18 months, the department has conducted 400 audits of contractors. And the good news is that more than 65% of the contractors have the CEO communicating the importance of equal employment opportunity. The bad news is about a third of our contractors, the CEO is not communicating the importance of equal employment opportunity. Also, we're finding about 35 to 40% of the companies that we have audited, senior management is not receiving any reports from human resources as it relates to their activity. We're also seeing in about 20 to 25% of the contractors that the efforts about contacting Minsky institutions, community organizations, working with unions, that they're writing it down on paper that they're going to do it, but then they're not actually doing it. So we have been in conversation with those contractors, again, about the importance of really creating opportunities for all. If you're making a commitment to be inclusive and have strategies in the area of hiring and recruiting, that you're actually caring for it and doing what you said that you were going to do. The worker shortage issue within the space of the state of Minnesota and across the world, in reality here. Many employers have asked us as it relates to what are the things that we found successful on the project for the U.S. Bank Stadium. So for the U.S. Bank Stadium project, the goal had been adjusted from 11 to 32% for people of color. That project ended up for 36% in the area of workers of color, the number of hours that the people of color worked on that particular project. In Hennepin and Ramsey County, in this four-and-a-half-year time frame, the percentage of color workers performing work who were for people of color in Hennepin County, we achieved a participation rate of 32%. Well, it goes on to the next slide. Thanks. For the 78 projects, it was 33. For the 50 projects in Ramsey County, it was 27.5%. The five counties that surround Hennepin and Ramsey, Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Scott, and Washington, that goal was adjusted from 11%, and what was actually achieved was 17.9%. We go back one. When the initial goals were announced, there was a lot of consternation as it relates to some within society as it relates to what is the level of participation in our workforce by people of color and by women in non-traditional areas such as construction. The work which has been done within construction to pull together and to see this as an opportunity paradigm shifting moment to create a way forward to bring more people in the industry can't be understated. People call outside of the state of Minnesota and ask what has happened, what has been so successful from the building trades and working together with building owners to create opportunities for jobs for people within the construction industry. And to be able to move from where we were less than 5 years ago, where we had participation rates at 11% or lower, and now seeing participation rates over 30% in Hennepin County, and then in the five surrounding areas at 18%, and in Ramsey County almost at 28%, is astounding as it relates to seeing how an industry can work together to really create opportunities. We're at the table now to sort of capture the best practices that we have learned over the last 4 years, and we're hoping that we're going to be able to then carry that forward and then hopefully use that as a way to have other conversations and other industry clusters, such as healthcare, finances, manufacturing, to truly create, again, opportunities for all within the state of Minnesota.
Commissioner, we do have one, two, three, four other entities that are going to be presenting here today, and I just want to make sure that we don't short them in time or short members on time, too.
Sure.
So I'm hoping that you can jump ahead, ask members to make sure that they read through the slides in between and make sure that they forward any questions that they have to Commissioner Lindsay. But maybe we can go to slide 17 and take care of that, if you would, Commissioner.
Sure.
Regional offices. Within the governor's budget, he identifies a need for having regional offices. Again, going back to creating opportunities for all within the state of Minnesota and carrying forward the success from initiatives such as the U.S. Bank Stadium project. We have been having conversations within Rochester, Duluth, Worthington, around the state with various communities. How can they work together? How can they partner with DEED, DOLLY, educational institutions, Department of Human Rights, to foster opportunities, again, for all? Back page. I just wanted to tie in this idea of the Minnesota Emerging Entrepreneur Board so people in the audience and as well as members on the committee appreciate the fact that the legislature tied in the work of the department in the area of business development. So not just thinking only in relates to investigation. If we could go forward to the offices. So with the work identified within the Minnesota Emerging Entrepreneurs Board, we're taking what we had learned in our efforts over the last couple of years and carrying those forward into places outside of the seven county metro and trying to address issues and challenges that emerging entrepreneurs have in establishing and moving forward with their respective businesses. We also have been partnering with the McKnight Foundation and the Regional Economic Development Initiative that they have, bringing in leaders from communities across Minnesota, and again trying to collaborate, find partnerships to drive entrepreneurial growth. The budget of the department, we currently have less than 40 individuals. If you take a look at the Office of Legislative Auditor report from 96, the department had 56 individuals. Within the Star Tribune article, they took a look at data over the last 25 years. You actually see where the department at one point in time had up to 70 employees.
Yeah, you know, I want to comment on that, Commissioner, because, you know, what's amazing, you've been able to do some great efficiencies. I look back to slide 9 here, and with your department size, you've been able to decrease your investigation by 142. The inventory that you mentioned dropped by 70%, trying to do that. So I commend you on doing a good job with the size of your staff that you have. It looks like you have things well under hand. So appreciate that. Commissioner, slide 19.
So when we take a look at the budget for the Department of Human Rights, and Madam Chair, I appreciate your comments as it relates to the efficiency within the department. But I also understand that there are changing dynamics as it relates to sort of the challenges for the department going forward. So when I have been outside of the seven county metro, I try to bring along and ensure that I have my bilingual enforcement officers with me, because my Spanish is not that good. So what I am finding is that need of having additional bilingual enforcement officers, bilingual individuals within the department is going to be a need going forward. So in the context of our request for additional funding, there are efficiencies that we are building upon, but to maintain, continue, and move forward, there is going to be a need for additional funding within the department. The department is primarily funded from the general fund operations. We get very few dollars from federal funding from grants or fees. There is some funding that we get from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Those are for cases which could be filed with the EEO, with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Under the work-share agreement with them, we have an opportunity to investigate those cases such that they then do not have to then investigate those cases. Payroll represents 75% of the spending within the department. The operating expenses, roughly 25%. There is a slide here as relates to the historical funding within the department. Again, you see that the federal funds is a very small portion of the funding which comes from the to the Department of Human Rights. The organizational structure here that we have provided for you, Tristy Auger will be starting here in a few days. The assistant that I had before retired had worked at the department for 39 years. We have a couple of individuals who have worked in that category of over 30 years. Peter Zuniga has just started as a supervisor and also providing assistance to me on the various legal issues which come before the department. Mindful of the time, are there questions that folks on the committee have for the department?
We do. Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two brief questions. Commissioner Lindsay, thank you for your testimony. But who is it that can bring charges to investigate discrimination? Is it just the person that bring forth the charge, or can a collective bargaining unit bring forth the charges? How does that work?
Commissioner?
Yeah. Representative, Madam Chair, members of the committee, anyone can bring a charge to the Department of Human Rights. The Act does provide that the commissioner has the ability to initiate a charge on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The most typical instance in which the commissioner brings a charge would be an instance, and we have about five or six of these, where there is a minor which is alleging discrimination within an educational institution, and there may be several of those minors within that educational institution. In order to alleviate some of the concerns that parents might have as it relates to exposing their child to further negative consequences, I will then bring it on behalf of the state, and I'll just list the commissioner's name.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then second and final question. The Chair referred to slide 9 about increased efficiencies. What I was curious about is, what are some of the improvement practices that you implemented that increased efficiency, because apparently it worked reasonably well. Can you speak to that a little bit? What is it that you did that worked?
Sure. Representative, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, there have been some efficiencies as it relates to streamlining the process for taking initial complaints. We have provided additional training as it relates to issues concerning jurisdiction. There have been some additional changes which we have made as it relates to interviewing clients. Some of the things I tapped into or brought in from individuals that I had worked with in teaching legal writing at some of the local law schools, and then also my experience in practicing law with working with legal assistants, how we could bring in some efficiencies to the enforcement officers. I would be remiss if I did not say, though, even though when we're looking at this 290 days where we are at, the statute really encourages for non-complex cases that the Department of Human Rights complete investigations within 180 days. So we are working very hard as it relates to that goal, but we are short of it as of now, but we are continuing to work for it. So that is the importance of bringing in additional officers, I would say, to regional offices, because that cuts down on transportation costs on those cases that are outside the Southern County Metro, and that we're more efficiently able to address investigations in that manner.
And Commissioner, what is your transportation costs currently out of your budget?
Um,
4% would that be? And in the interest of time, I tell you what, just if you want to get back to me, because we do have a list of members that have
questions. I have a... Last year, we spent approximately $10,000 last fiscal year.
Okay, and can you state your name for the record?
Oh, sorry. Rose at Ship Chandler, Deputy Commissioner.
Great, thank you. Okay, so roughly $10,000. All right.
Madam Chair, if I could, as relates to that, what we're doing now is doing a lot of these things by phone, and to the extent that we identify things in which we'd want to do face-to-face, we're then expending money to do those. We could actually cut down by having people within more remote sites to be doing traveling and doing several of the investigations.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, you know I'm going to ask about IT. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your G175000 line 41196, centralized IT services. Looks like you're having about a 32% increase. Tell me what that's all about, if you would, and help us understand. That's a fairly significant jump in your funding request. So if you could give us some details on that.
Commissioner?
Sure. Representative Nash, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The IT cost for us is to make sure that we're able to manage the data which comes in as relates in the area of contract compliance and then also within investigations in which we conduct. The jump as relates to it concerning from a budgetary standpoint, the overall cost to ensure that security is maintained with the information that we receive probably is best addressed by the commissioner within a minute.
And I'll just cut you off. It's in the interest of brevity, if you can get us that information, because that's a huge spending increase, and seems like you guys are maybe trying to find the answer. Would you get us that answer maybe by the end of the week?
Commissioner?
Representative Nash, Madam Chair, we can do that.
Thank
you. Yeah, and there's other line items you've got, Madam Chair, IT spending on. For your St. Cloud office, you're doubling spending there as well, line 41196. Help us understand what that is, because if you're running lean and mean and you have not grown your staff, I'm just trying to understand what the nature of your increased IT spend is. If it's cybersecurity, then I'd really like to know what and why. And because I talked to Commissioner Boozy the other day, and I wasn't aware that this was being done. I would love those answers.
Representative Nash, but I'm sure we can get back to you. But as it relates to the St. Cloud office, we're really talking about the expansion of an office. Before we had individuals who were taking laptops with sort of key fobs to come to St. Cloud, we're really trying to be able to get it such that it's wired so it's directly connected to the state. So you're probably going to see a one-time increase for the St. Cloud office.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Uglin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I want to talk about the St. Cloud office. I'm curious because it's just shortly over an hour away. What was the planning process in terms of selecting St. Cloud versus, for instance, Duluth or Wilmer, which could serve our Hispanic community quite well out there? St. Cloud is so close. You're trying to move into regional offices. Wouldn't it be wiser to go to a town like Duluth, which is twice or three times as big as St. Cloud and at least a couple hours away?
Representative, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the department has come to the legislature over the last 3 years and asked for funding for regional offices and extended outreach, and we have identified the cities of Duluth, Rochester in the past. As it relates to why St. Cloud and why are we there now, that really has to do with the efforts of Mayor Kleiss in securing some funding from the federal government. That funding was then used to partner with the Department of Human Rights to bring the Department of Human Rights to the city of St. Cloud. We were here last session, and I appreciate the funding that we received from the legislature to continue to support the operations within the city of St. Cloud and the support that we got from Mayor Kleiss and others within the city of St. Cloud to continue the efforts within that city.
Well, Representative Uglum?
Commissioner, it seems like we're bucking a trend here a little bit. In private industry, of course, private industry is consolidating offices and utilizing IT support and the modern methods of communication and everything else. And have you done projections in terms of your long-term costs for opening up these satellite offices? And I appreciate your continuous improvement process that you're doing, but how are you going to continue to drive down costs when you're increasing overhead so much?
Commissioner?
Representative, Madam Chair, members of the committee, there's always a delicate balancing act as it relates to setting up a new office. That being said, however, I think what we have heard from citizens throughout the state of Minnesota is that there are needs within these respective cities, and to have the Department of Human Rights located out of St. Paul and out of just St. Cloud is something that they really want to have happen. So that face-to-face ability to actually meet with someone is significant. And I would say some of the cases that we have, it's really important to have face-to-face contact. So there have been situations in which women have come to us where they have been stalked by their male harasser on the job, and they have been physically threatened. To be able to develop a rapport of trust, that can't always be established by a simple phone conversation. We have instances in which children are being bullied quite severely. Those situations of epithets being hurled at them, they may not be comfortable just simply having that conversation, or parents would be comfortable with that conversation simply over the phone. So it is important for people to be there. Before I was commissioner, I worked at the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. Yes, there's a lot of things that we can do over the phone, but sometimes it's very important for police officers and prosecutors and investigators to be in face-to-face conversations with people.
What is a quick follow-up? Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, is the city of St. Cloud itself contributing any money to this program here for the office?
Commissioner?
Representative, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, Mayor Kleiss has sought to assist the department as it relates to the rent that we pay for the current lease that we have. I believe that we're going to have adequate funding to be able to provide him with fair compensation for the lease that we have in St. Cloud. But he has heard from his constituency, he has heard from the people that he represents, that he truly wants to have the Department of Human Rights there in St. Cloud, and would do what he could to make sure that financially we have as much people, as many people in St. Cloud to be there to hear the concerns of citizens in that surrounding area.
But really no Madam Chair, really no contribution on the part of the city.
Commissioner?
Representative, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, as of right now, there's no financial contribution, but I don't want to diminish Mayor Kleiss's efforts to secure financial contributions prior to the legislature providing funding to the department last year.
And, Commissioner, how much was the federal money that came in? Was it a grant, or is this ongoing money, or what? Where did this – how much is it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do not know.
Can you get me that information? I'd like to know how much it is, what's the expiration of it. So I'm going to have some of those details so we have an idea of how long the feds are going to be putting money into it.
The Madam Chair, I can tell you now that the feds are no longer putting any money into it. What they did before, I couldn't tell you specifically what was provided to Mayor Kleiss.
So, Commissioner, it was one-time money then from the feds?
I believe that it was one-time money. It predates me coming to the department, the relationship that Mayor Kleiss had with the Department of Human Rights. So I don't know if that was a three-year window or if that was a five-year grant. I just do not know.
If you can provide us with that information and conversations with Mayor Kleiss, that would be helpful. Thank you. Members, we have several folks still on the list that are wishing to ask questions. We do have four other entities that are going to be presenting to us today. I've got Representative Olson, Representative Kunesh Podine, Representative Detmer, Representative Quam, Representative Fenton. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. So regarding the efficiencies, that was good to see, as others have noted. Could you speak to how demographic trends in Minnesota, particularly growing communities of color, and what you see coming down the pike in terms of workload? Could you just speak to demographic trends around language, around growing number of communities of color? Because you did acknowledge that there are the folks that need to come and seek services for complaints tend to come from those communities. And as Minnesota grows in that direction, could you speak to what's ahead?
Commissioner?
Representative, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the question. When Ambassador Nicholas Kay, Special Envoy to the United Nations, came to Minnesota 2 years ago, I had an opportunity to spend the better part of a half day with him. Minnesota is known as a city in which a lot of individuals from Somalia have located here, about 100,000 on the world stage. But it's not just limited just to Somalia. There are a lot of individuals from African countries which have come to the Twin Cities, have come to Minnesota. So today we actually have hired somebody who is fluent in Senegalese. So the idea of being able to speak other languages is very important to us, and we're hearing that from people. When U.S. Ambassador to Laos, Daniel Kloon, was here less than a year ago, I had an opportunity to spend the better part of the day with him. So Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, individuals from Southeast Asia talking about their influence, their impact, their coming to see and feel the American dream here, and being able to facilitate that communication with what's going on in DLI or with Indeed or emerging entrepreneurs. We're seeing more of that within our agency. And again, that's something that we're seeking to hire more people who are fluent. We try to partner with the respective state ethnic councils to help bridge that gap, but it's still one in which we need some intentional effort and work in that area.
Representative Olson? Representative Kunesh Podine.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Slide 16, it talks about reducing disparities and encouraging partnerships, which I think is a fabulous mission. But I'm curious as to how it is that you are able, or how you are developing those meaningful relationships with tribal nations in Minnesota, number one, and number two, also how you are addressing homelessness in Minnesota through your agency.
Commissioner.
Representative, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, the tribal consultation policy work, again, this requires for us to be meeting with the tribal nation leaders and sitting down and identifying for them, similar to what you do in working with your constituents, what are the issues which are most important, and then trying to find solutions within the overlapping city, county, state, sometimes federal interplay. So we have tried to be very intentional in negotiating memorandums of understanding to try and solve the worker shortage among state contractors with tribal nations. There are a lot of activities which are going on within the tribal lands to create opportunities. It's a function of facilitating information between two groups that may not necessarily always have the ability to have that conversation or know folks within their sphere of influence to come to those conversations. As it relates to homelessness, there is a connection as it relates to mental health issues and then also as it relates to race. A large number of individuals who find themselves being homeless are individuals who have mental health needs. We try to, again, broker relationships between entities who are providing service in the mental health area as it relates to community groups. There are about 40 local human rights organizations, human rights councils, that are separate, independent from the Department of Human Rights, that are funded by cities and counties, that are really looking for information about how they can partner on strategies and solutions for homelessness. So again, we're facilitating information collaboration between those groups and working to ensure that the mental health needs are really being served within the respective communities all throughout Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Detmer?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner Lindsay. If you could provide the just short on time, if you could provide the committee here and how you work with the veterans' preference in terms of hiring and issues that come up with veterans' preferences, as if you could make a, maybe a couple comments and then maybe provide the committee with how that law affects hiring and so forth.
Sure. Representative, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'll provide some more information at a later point in time, but I will say that I did, Jerry's last name is escaping me right now. I think it's Vogel, but I'm not sure if that's correct. But in any event, I did have an opportunity to work with him very intently around U.S. Bank Stadium on developing goals and outreach strategies for veterans. And again, this is something which we're again trying to carry forward. As it relates to workforce, as it relates to veterans, that's not identified currently within the Human Rights Act. But that does not mean that when we're talking about inclusive workforce strategies that we don't communicate to employers that from a holistic standpoint, that's a population you should take into consideration, very consistent with General Nash behind the Yellow Ribbon Program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. You've supplied the minority hiring goals, metro area, and we've had discussion about regional sites, knowing that Duluth is, I think, below the state average for diversity. Do you have the data on regional demographics and regional hiring so we can see the local population of workers and then the hiring percentages? And that might assist us in justification, I guess, maybe for prioritizing regional centers. And then because of the recent activity on, you know, slide 14 touches on Ban the Box, I'm assuming that that's still in the developing phase and you anticipate maybe more activity since it's fairly new. Can you maybe offline generate a list of the jobs that are allowed to adversely choose because of criminal activity? Because in a committee early today, I was made aware that there are agencies of the state government that impact licensing if a employee wasn't convicted, wasn't arrested, but had something on their record. And, you know, if our state government has that kind of retribution, you know, through the licensing process, it'd be nice to understand the dimensions of what's allowed and not allowed. Thank you.
Representative, Madam Chair, the three things that you mentioned, the goals as it relates to outside the Seven County Metro, I'd be happy to. There's five regions outside of the Seven County Metro, Northeast, Northwest, Central, Southwest, Southeast, and four of the five we've exceeded the goals for people of color within those four regions, but I'll give you the specific numbers as it relates to where the goal is and where the number is. As it relates to Ban the Box, we have probably initiated more than 100 investigations concerning people asking for information prior to allowing an individual to interview. And again, we can supply more information. As it relates to crimes which are out there in which an employer could take that into consideration, the legislature, I believe about 6-7 years ago, but I'm not positive on that, there was a information gathered by the legislature on all crimes. Which could be used, and we can gather that reporter, then provide some additional information to you on that.
Representative Kwan, good. Commissioner, thank you. We appreciate any of the information that you can provide to us. I have one more question. I'm interested in the seven counties that you haven't investigated in, so if you can provide that when you're providing all the other answers to the questions that were asked today, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. With that, members, we are going to hear from the Council of Minnesotans for African Heritage Council. And on deck after them is the Council on Asian Pacific. And we are short on time, and I want to make sure that members have time to ask questions. So I'm going to ask that if you can do shorter, wonderful, but if you can keep it to 10 minutes, then at least we've got time to ask questions for each of the councils. So,
certainly, Madam Chair.
Yes. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Lewis Porter, Executive Director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. And I'll ask that you follow along with, you have in your packets a brief set of slides from us.
Yes. And if you could talk up a little bit, it's hard to hear in this room. At least for me it is. Maybe it's a sign of my age.
Glad to. We appreciate the opportunity, Madam Chair. And the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage was established in 1980 as the Council on Black Minnesotans. A new statute passed in 2015 changed the name and revised the focus, along with the other ethnic councils. And the council works to connect people of African heritage with the legislative process in Minnesota through public engagement as well as gathering and sharing information. Our legal responsibilities by statute include the council must work for the manifestations of equity economically, socially, legally, and politically. Recent accomplishments include during the last session, the council worked with the United Black Legislative Agenda. This was done by working with five other organizations to convene 20 organizations to create the first black agenda in the state. We were able to attain 35 million times two, actually, for each year of the biennium for the businesses and job development for people of African heritage, as well as create Somali youth job training programs, prevent the opening of a private prison, and increase penalties for hate crimes. In addition to that, we held two major public listening sessions, one on police-community relations and the other on an array of topics pertinent to the African heritage community. We're continuing public engagement, research, and information gathering across Minnesota that explores the possibility of creating up to five African heritage cultural arts centers throughout the state. And we found with these listening sessions they were great entree for me as the relatively new executive director. I've been in this position for just over a year, but it was a great way to engage the communities in a positive way and also open the door for them to talk about an array of other topics. We found that as we went around the state that, as the commissioner said, the communities of color are growing. We also found that in rural areas of the state, a lot of people of African heritage felt very disenfranchised and really wanted to be heard and really wanted to find more access to state government. We collaborated with the Center for School Change and other organizations to sponsor a conference that informed parents and students about the benefits of dual college and high school credit programs, as well as working to inform leaders about the importance of those programs. We are doing some of the groundwork that could establish a program aimed at youth education about the little-known public health challenge of sulfur allergies that are prevalent in people of African heritage. We nominated one of our own, Benjamin Mackay, a retiring council board member, for the Martin Luther King Lifetime Achievement Award, which was presented earlier this month. And we have adopted, embraced, and are living the motto, Together Towards a More Equitable State. We're in the process of doing our agenda for the coming year, for this session, rather, and our priorities include closing the education gap, advancing early childhood education, supporting after-school programs, and expanding access to employment. So with that, I will complete the overview, and I'm welcome to pleased to take your questions.
Thank you, Director Porter. I just have a question. Do you see it's part of your role then to, when you're looking at the legal responsibilities that you have, do you include education on discrimination and kind of helping to inform people about that? Do you see that as part of your role as well, of your council, or?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, as a matter of fact, we see our role as connecting people of African heritage throughout the state with all of the resources and all of the benefits of the state.
And Director Porter, you mentioned that you had done a survey. So did you physically go out to different parts of the state then to talk to people, or was it something you had folks send in, or can you talk to a little bit more about that piece?
Certainly. The survey predated me, Madam Chair, members of the committee, but we have been on the road quite a bit, visiting many parts of the state, both me and my staff, as well as using consultants to do that.
Okay. And, Mr. Porte, when you're looking at the state, where do you, you know, see the most issues of concern or area of concern or people that maybe are looking for a greater voice?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we see increases in Rochester, Mankato, Moorhead, St. Cloud. As you know, the African Heritage community is growing in outstate Minnesota because of the outreach efforts and the work of nonprofits that are pervasive in Minnesota. So we often find ourselves surprised at the pockets and increasing numbers of African Heritage people in places where we hadn't expected it.
And Director Porter, too, you know, you mentioned you've got the United Black Legislative Agenda that you had worked with them. What are some of the other entities that you guys have worked with then in the last?
Certainly. And we're including in the United Black Legislative Agenda is the Neighborhoods Organizing for Change, Urban League, NAACP, Black Lives Matter. We've also worked with an array of nonprofits throughout the state, and I could get you those lists.
Would you? That would be really helpful.
I'd be glad to.
Okay, we've got a couple of members here. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Porter, question for you. On your page 3, under recent accomplishments, and I'm not trying to be contentious, but this was a bill that went through the legislature last year, and it was a legislative decision ultimately to be made, but we've appropriated money to you, and one of the accomplishments that you're listing is preventing opening of a private prison. Can you help me understand that activity and from where it was appropriated?
Certainly. Representative, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we worked with the United Black Legislative Agenda, and that's one of the things that was before the state and one of the directions the state in which the state was moving. And we did testimony. We also wrote op-ed pieces, and we worked very hard to prevent that, because we truly believe that private prisons hurt our community, and we're very much against the privatization of the prison system. And so we worked in conjunction with those other organizations to discourage that, because that was the direction that was headed.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And then Director Porter, once again, I'm going to ask my IT question. How did you arrive at your ask on your IT spend? Did you work in conjunction with Minute? Did they provide the number to you as to what they thought you needed? Help us understand that, if you would.
Certainly. Yes, we work with IT on that, and I look to them for guidance, because that is not my strong suit, so I take guidance from them.
Representative?
Madam Chair, I'm good. Thank you.
Next is Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the Legislative Auditor's Report of 2014 had certain criticisms, and I think the 2015 legislation that went through this committee and others tried to address some of the concerns. Were you able to reorient your focus in a way that furthered your mission? Can you say a little bit about that? Have there changes occurred that have made your council more effective in working with the legislative process?
Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Yes, one of the main thrust of that audit report was that the councils, including this one, was really spread itself too thin and trying to do too many things with too few resources. You may recall that at one time this council organized MLK Day. We had a program to increase the number of foster children and black adoptive parents. And while those are wonderful things, those are outside of the central mission of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. So we've been very intentional about focusing on policy and making that the focus of our work. We've been very intentional about working with the other ethnic councils and really thinking how we can best connect with the legislature, provide information, be a resource to, and a consultant with the legislative staff as well as members of the legislature to have a more policy focus.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Andrew. I do appreciate it. I think the extent to which you can assist in the legislative process with advice and recommendations is really a service to us, so thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Hugh. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Director Porter, I have a copy of the Office of the Legislative Auditor report that was generated in March of 14, which resulted in a number of changes to the various councils. And it's an excellent report, and there were a couple of findings that I would like you to briefly speak to on what the council has done since this report. The first is that the councils have done a poor job of identifying specific objectives and measurable outcomes. And the second is significant, that there were significant communication problems just in general with regard to outreach to specific constituencies. So if you could just speak in a nutshell to those two concerns and what the council, your council has done to improve upon those.
Supporter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the question. We have been very intentional. Your first question in terms of measurable goals, we took the survey that was done prior to my joining the council and used that as the basis for our listening sessions, and then we've used that information in determining goals going forward. So we are still in the process of finalizing our agenda for this session. We've been very intentional in terms of using that information that we gather to build priorities and goals. Your second part of your question related to reaching various communities, and we have also worked very hard to get into outstate Minnesota, as well as to have listening sessions and forums, and to increase our communication with as many communities as possible. We also have recently hired a outreach director who's going to do even more of that.
Madam Chair, Director Porter, I appreciate that, and I know that you have been in your position, it sounds like, a year. This was a report that was generated 2 years ago, and obviously have a new employee about to start. But I would appreciate receiving a recap, I'm sure that my colleagues on the committee would as well, on specifically with regard to the measurable outcomes. What was the goal within the last year, and what outcomes have been achieved. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
Mr. Porter, I actually have a couple of questions. As someone of African heritage, I'm really excited to hear some of the work that has been happening. But I have some concerns. I know Representative Pugh raised a concern about outreach and measurable goals. I, being of Somali descent, I know that there has been a couple of issues with discrimination around the state. There was the problems that the Somali community was having in St. Cloud. I know there's been some incidents in Minneapolis. And there's been some hate crimes. I know there's been some legislation here that would be beneficial to the Somali community, to African immigrants, and some that would be detrimental to their success. And I am wondering, where was the involvement of the council in these incidents? Was that something that we've just missed, if you can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm glad to speak to that. We have members' representation of the Somali community on our board who very closely monitor and help us in our outreach efforts to the Somali community. And so there's been a very distinct effort to talk with, connect with resources, and to engage the Somali community, and we plan to continue doing that. And so we have been on the sidelines working with them, talking with them, being an ear, pointing them to resources and encouraging them forth, as well as counseling them and informally and guiding them.
If you don't mind, I would actually really like to get a briefing of the particular involvements and how the council has been able to guide this particular community through this process and some of the legislation that you have worked on or advocated for or against, and how you've incorporated new immigrants in that process of African descent.
I'd be very happy to get that to you. And in some instances, the assistance that we offered dealt with pending litigation and things that we're not able to reveal. But in as much as I can reveal, I'd be very happy to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Rader. Next up, we have a representative from the Asian Pacific Council. Welcome to the council and state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity.
Can you speak into the microphone? It's really hard to hear. I apologize.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. For the record, my name is Sia Hur, and I am the Executive Director at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and for brevity purposes, I'll just call it the Asian Council for today. To my right is our 2017 Chair, Mr. David Maeda. All right, so we're here this afternoon for the purpose of providing you with an overview of our agency, and so I'll just start off by saying that I believe that you have a copy of our PowerPoint presentation, and you should also have received a hard copy of our annual report, which looks like this. All right. So what we have in front of us today is a simple organizational chart, which I believe you requested, Madam Chair. And I'll just start off by saying that I became executive director at the Asian Council in March of 2013. The team that we have in place today is dramatically different from the team that I inherited. What we have today, in addition to me, is a research analyst, a legislative liaison, and an office manager, and I'll speak more to their roles and responsibilities later on when I speak to the new clarified mission of the ethnic councils. The next slide speaks to the budget of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans since 2004. Some of you may already know that the council was established in 1985 at the height of the wave of refugees coming in from Southeast Asia after the fall of Vietnam to communism. At the time that the council was established, the Asian American and Pacific Islander community made up less than 1% of the total population in Minnesota. Today, we're at almost 5%, which is relevant to this presentation, and I'll conclude on that point later on in my presentation. But over the course of its 31 years as a state agency, the council's budget has had its ups and downs, as you can see based on this slide. We experienced a dramatic increase in our base budget in, I believe, fiscal year 14, when our budget was increased by about $100,000 per year of that biennium, due to the fact that prior to that we were receiving some legacy funds that were being appropriated to us through the Humanity Center. But I believe that in the 2014 legislature, it was decided that it would be best to increase the council's base budget using general funds. And so what you see between fiscal year 13 and fiscal year 14 is a dramatic increase in the base budget, which really paved the way for the kind of council that is the Asian Council today. That increased budget allowed for us to put in place a team that I really believe is essential for any of the ethnic councils to be successful, and that's a team of individuals with the skills, the knowledge, to not only navigate the legislative process, but the partisan politics of this place, as well as the ethnic politics within the many communities that we seek to represent and elevate here in the legislative process. So, as a result, in the annual report that you have in front of you, we speak to the achievements that we have had in the last biennium, and I think for the sake of time, I won't go over those achievements since it's, I think we did a pretty good job of explaining to you what our achievements are as they relate to research, legislative activities, as well as community engagement. And so I'll just move into the why our work matters. The Asian American and Pacific Islander community here in the state of Minnesota is unique from that of any other state. And the reason why we say unique is because we are a refugee majority community. The first slide that you get to, the table depicting the 10 largest communities under the umbrella of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, indicates just sort of why this community is a refugee majority community. And so what you see there is that the largest community under our umbrella is the Hmong community. As many of you may recall, that community is here in the United States of America because of the role it played in the secret war in Laos. This community is estimated to be, according to the 2014-2015 American Community Survey, it's estimated to be close to 90,000 strong. It is a refugee community. It is the largest community, and right under that is the Asian Indian community. I bring these two communities to your attention because they are our two largest communities, but they are also communities with very, very different lived experiences. The story of where people have been, how they got here, is important to you and to me because it lets us know, right, what their hopes and dreams may be tomorrow, so that as we are creating public policies, the decisions we make reflect the realities of these communities. And so our Asian Indian community is estimated to be about half the size of the Hmong American community, and these two communities play out quite obviously in the work that the Asian Council does. David, would you go to the next slide? The third slide provides you with an overview of our community as it relates to age distribution, and I bring this to your attention because this is a relatively young community. We are 10 years younger than the average Minnesotan, and so you see some numbers there where it says one-third of Asian Minnesotans are under 18 years of age. All of this is to say that the future of Minnesota depends largely on communities such as the Asian Pacific Minnesotan community. We are young. We are one of the most educated communities. And so, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that really sums up my presentation to you. As you may know, which I didn't speak to, and I think it's because I would like to give you some time to ask me questions about the OLA report and what we have done at the Asian Council since then. But the work of the Council is that of an advisor to you, an advocate for the community, and at the end of the day, I believe that if we have been the kind of advisor to you that we should be and the kind of advocate for our communities that we should be, then we have bridged the gap that often exists between state government and members of cultural communities. At the Asian Council, we believe that we have delivered on our broad statutory mandate by listening to the members of our communities, understanding their needs, and identifying where public policy can have a positive impact. We've been educating you and our communities on the why, the when, the where, and the how of communicating and interacting with one another. And we've opened channels of communication between you and our communities that we believe at the Council truly promote and nurture collaboration and understanding. And so with that, I will thank you for the opportunity to provide you with this quick overview, and I'll answer any questions that you may have. I may just remind the new members at the table that I am the only executive director that came out of the restructuring effort, so I should be an expert on the OLA findings as well as the key provisions within Minnesota Statute 15.0145.
Thank you, Ms. Herr. I appreciate your speed. I'm guessing Representative Pugh has her same question for you, if you want to restate it from her.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate your outstanding presentation, Director Herr, and welcome to the committee, Chair Maeda. And actually, this set of questions were inspired by the meeting that we had yesterday, so I want to express appreciation for your having reached out to my office and just heighten my awareness once again of the work that you've done, and so I appreciate that greatly. So, yes, I do have the same questions ever so briefly. You've highlighted some of this in your proposal, I can see, but most specifically, I would be interested in how you have improved upon your outreach to your constituencies, and what does that look like? So thank you.
Ms. Herr.
Madam Chair and Representative Pugh, thank you for that question, and, of course, thank you for the opportunity to have had time to sit down with you prior to this committee meeting. So to your question about outreach, you know, on any given year during my tenure as executive director, I am in the community more often than anyone at the council. So we're averaging about 40 six events per month. And you can well imagine that for one person, that's a lot of events. You know, I can't, as I'm out and about across the state, whether I'm speaking with legislators or mayors or council members, I'm very intentional about saying do not ever underestimate the value of just being present inside communities. I take that preaching very seriously, and so our outreach at the council has been both intentional and unintentional to some extent. So whenever there are community events, for example, New Year's celebrations or graduations, and we're invited, we will attend as much as possible. To the extent possible, I always take legislators as well as other locally elected and appointed officials with me, because one of the core beliefs at the Asian Council is that it's not the relationship between the Asian Council and the members of our community that matters. It's the relationship between you as those who were elected to govern and the people you are governing that matters. And so to the extent possible, we try to facilitate direct relationships. You know, we also host and create a number of events on an annual basis that speak directly to the role that we play as a state agency, and that's that our job is to gather intelligence and feed it into the policy pipeline. And so every year we host a legislative session recap right at the end of session so that we can communicate with the members of our community what were some of the key decisions made, how we expect those decisions to impact our communities, and then we also invite legislators to participate in this event. That's just a simple overview of the outreach efforts that we have made in an attempt to make sure that we meet our communities where they are.
Representative, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that really thorough response. Madam Chair, it just has struck me as we've been presented with the organization chart, and that's just very interesting to me, and I'm not having reviewed the other presentations that we're about to hear. I think it would be very interesting to all of us to better understand what the organization chart looks like for each of the councils, not to mention the job description for each of the members. I think there might be some opportunities here to see, so I would appreciate that going forward.
And I think they got your note, and Mr. Porter's still here, so he can provide that as well. So,
thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Hurd, thank you for your leadership. One of the things that, when I look at the information before us here, that the ethnic groups in Minnesota, the largest Asian ethnic groups, I noticed the wide variety of ethnic grogroups. I don't know, we've been working with the Hmong community in my neighborhood. There's huge diversity of opinion. So it's not one monolithic group within the ethnic groups that you're working with. So my question to you, I guess, is how challenging is that for you to come up with policy recommendations given the wide diversity of opinions and ideas and knowing that it is not one singular ethnic group?
Ms. Hurd?
If I'm not putting you on the spot.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, that's an amazing question, and I take that question as an opportunity for me to just speak a little bit to the diversity of the Asian American community here in the state. At the back of the annual report, you'll see that we've raised three questions, which we believe all of you have, even if you're not willing to ask us those questions publicly. Absolutely, there is no one community. We are a community made up of very, very different communities in terms of socio-political, historical experiences. And so when it comes to our positions on policy issues or bills that come before you, the question that the Asian Council consistently asks itself is, in addition to considering what is in the best interest of these communities, given the intelligence we have about them, so that speaks to where they've been, how they came to be where they are, and what their hopes and dreams are for tomorrow. We also consider our role as a state agency. Our job is to advise you and hope that in the act of advising you that we're promoting good politics and that good politics paved the way for good public policies because it generates mutual understanding between the involved stakeholders and that at the end of the day, good governance is the result, right? And so I think, you know, whether it's a refugee community that we're advocating when it comes to a specific bill or it's an immigrant community, we're asking ourselves, what do you need as policymakers from us in order to make a decision that is your own, but it is driven by facts facts, as well as the stories that speak to the realities of the communities that we represent. And so I think in this space and in this time, that is the best answer that I could possibly give you. We all know that in reality, right, people's lives are very complicated and complex, and the best decisions that you make require that you understand the nuances. And so that's what I do behind the scenes. The work of the ethnic councils, particularly the Asian Council, goes beyond just you seeing me in committee and testifying with a three-minute-long statement, right? I am oftentimes behind the scenes inside legislators' offices having really frank and honest conversations with them about what the data says, what the data doesn't say, and what just really at the end of the day, what is in the best interest of this state and not just one group of people.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Herr, thank you for being here. I'm going to ask, but glad to see you here. We've covered a lot of ground together in the last couple of years. Two questions. One regarding the centralized IT spend. Fairly significant jump over recent years. I'm not going to ask you to detail that now, but if you would get us those details in a letter to the chair and myself, we'd really appreciate it because that's a big jump. And then two, on your space rental and utilities, what percentage of the space rental and utilities is allocated for minute staff? And you can answer that now if you'd like to.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, I believe it would be in the best interest of the Asian Council if I were to follow up with the answers to those questions that you just raised.
Madam Chair. Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I'm happy to meet with you, but we would like those pieces of data, particularly if you can provide the I'm sure Minute has been guiding you like they do other groups and agencies. If you could provide us how they arrived at this fairly significant increase in spending, that would be great.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, I believe that my calendar is spotted all over with visits that are coming up with each and every one of you. I am particularly diligent about making my rounds with legislators that sit on the appropriations committees, and so I will be visiting with you very soon here, and I'll make sure that when I walk into your office that we have some information from Minute. You are right that we are one of the smart, we're one of the small agencies, and so all of the decisions pertaining to our IT needs are made by Minute, and they're just sort of, you know, communicated to us, and then our budget is appropriated appropriately.
Okay.
Madam Chair, and
Representative Nash.
Office is 557. I look forward to having you there because I do want to talk about how they determine that and then what is the actual need internally. And so we'll look forward to it.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Dr. Herr. This is probably some information for the rest of the committee, though, but there's a House File 127 is going forward, and that's regarding the Vietnam War. And it's Minnesota members, and it's a project by the Minnesota Public Television. They're going to be producing a program that's going to be aired here in Minnesota. And I don't know if you have heard about that yet, but if you want information about it, you can check with me and get you connected with the people from the public television.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair and Representative Detmer, in fact, I've looked at your bill, and I believe my intern is supposed to schedule for a meeting between you and me to particularly talk about that bill. You know, the topic is of particular interest to me. I think I have shared with you in private meetings as well as in committee that the reason that my family is here in the United States is a story that starts with the fall of Saigon and the fall of Vietnam to communism. And so I have a personal interest in the bill that you're initiating, as well as the community, as well as one of the largest communities under the Council of the under the umbrella of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. So I'll be seeing you shortly to talk about that, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And part of that broadcast is going to be covering the secret war. So.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director, thank you for coming today and your presentation. I don't see your annual report in here, but I really recommend I think you sent it to all of our offices, and I really enjoyed that. I thought it was really good and kind of helpful to explain some of what you mentioned today about the diversity in your group. And you kind of had articles on each of the major, groups and kind of the history, and I found that really informative. So thank you for that. And then on a lighter note, just wondering if you have any advice. Our team took second at the dragon races at Phelan this year. We were beat by the spam eaters down at Hormel, and just wondering if you have any advice on upping our game in the dragon race. But
Representative Lilly, I'm sure you can do that offline, so appreciate that.
Madam Chair.
We'll get you as much help as we can. Okay. Ms. Herr.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, I don't have an advice on how you might attain first place, but I would like to respond by saying that one of the key findings of the OLA report in 2014 was that the ethnic councils were spending too much of their scarce resources on cultural events. It happens to be that the Dragon Boat Festival was one of the events that the Asian Council was spending some of its time on. And so, you know, I wish you luck. I don't have any advice.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lilly.
And quickly to that point, I didn't realize that, but I would disagree. I think that outreach was healthy for the entire community, and I thought it was great how everybody was interacting and sharing food and breaking bread together and playing together. I thought it was really healthy for everyone involved. So thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Herr, and appreciate you guys coming today. We have, in the interest of time, we are going to move the Council on Latino Affairs to tomorrow, but I'd like the Indian Affairs Council to come down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. Who you represent?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dennis Olson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee today on behalf of the Indian Affairs Council. I will make sure that my presentation is brief to allow plenty of time for questions and comments following. Every time I start a presentation, I always like to ground us in the fact that we have 11 distinct separate sovereign tribal nations here in the state of Minnesota, and they're, of course, listed on my presentation and up on the screen for review as well. I also like to include a map of where our exterior boundaries of our 11 tribal nations in the state are located. We have 7 Ojibwe communities in the northern two-thirds of the state and 4 Dakota communities in the southern one-third of the state. The Minnesota Indian Affairs Council was established in 1963 as the first council of its type in the nation. We have our authority under Statute 3.922. One of our key statutory responsibilities to act as the official liaison between the 11 tribal nations in the state and the state legislature and governor's office. We work closely with the state agency tribal liaisons to assist the agencies in various capacities. We play a central role in the development of state legislation as well as plan and facilitate the annual tribal leader and governor summit. A brief organization chart, and I did put dates in there to note that while some of our members of the Indian Affairs Council staff have been on staff as members of the team for quite a while, you could see that we are a fairly new team, newly developed team, and particularly note that the 2016 year my name, that should be late 2016, I was hired in mid-November, so I've been executive director for approximately two and a half months. The Indian Affairs Council Executive Board is really unique in relation to the other ethnic councils of the state. We are actually governed by the 11 tribal leaders, 11 elected tribal leaders, tribal chairs, which composes our executive council. And you can see those representatives listed from the nations there. We also have members representing executive branch agencies, the governor's office, as well as the legislature representatives from both the state and the House of Representatives. Another unique thing related to the Indian Affairs Council is that we actually have an Urban Indian Advisory Board that's appointed by our executive council. Mm-hmm. It's a subcommittee of the Indian Affairs Council composed of 6 members that represent urban areas with high concentrations of American Indian people in the state of Minnesota. I mean, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Bemidji primarily. The Urban Indian Advisory Board holds meetings throughout urban areas in the state, and they help inform our executive board and present on issues unique to the urban community in Minnesota. What also makes the Indian Affairs Council incredibly unique in relation to the other ethnic councils is that we actually have some specific statutory-related responsibilities around cultural resources, primarily the protection and preservation of human remains at burial grounds and burial mounds throughout the state of Minnesota. We work collaboratively close with the Office of the State Archaeologist to make sure that those burial mounds, grave sites, are protected both public and private. And that authority comes from the Private Cemeteries Act, the Field Archaeology Act, as well as through federal law, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA. Another yet unique opportunity that we have is to administer revitalization and immersion grants for revitalization of the Dakota and Ojibwe languages, our first languages here in the state of Minnesota. And we do that through appropriations from the Legacy Amendment through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For the current biennium, our appropriation to administer those grants is just under $2 million. We also have a couple of other buckets of appropriated funds through Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. One is to reestablish a Dakota and Ojibwe Language Revitalization Working Group. The working group had originally submitted a report to the legislature in 2011, and we had just received a new appropriation to continue the work and recommendations from that 2011 report, and look forward to providing a continuity and new recommendations as a follow-up to the legislature following this biennium. One of the things we're most excited about is our involvement through the Why Treaties Matter exhibit. It's a unique partnership between the Minnesota Humanities Center and the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. We've had tremendous statewide impact through this exhibit, with over 79,000 people engaging with the exhibit since its development and inception. It's been through over 110 sites in 60 cities throughout the state of Minnesota, as well as traveling through various statewide systems like the Minnesota State Colleges system. And one of our most exciting accomplishments recently is that some of you who have been through the new public space on the third floor of the Capitol have seen the permanent installation of the Why Treaties Matter banner exhibit there, and so we're extremely proud of that and the story it's able to tell. A couple of accomplishments, and I know they've been highlighted elsewhere, particularly through Commissioner Lindsay's presentation, and I know there were questions about it. We were really excited as a council to help develop and shape and shepherd the Executive Order 1310, which mandates tribal consultation with all state agencies. And more importantly, it mandates that state agencies have a point person or a tribal liaison to work closely with the Indian Affairs Council, as well as with individual tribal nations, on that government-to-government consultative process. Part of the executive order also mandates state agency training. And so we've been involved in the tribal-state relations training, which is a partnership between MnDOT and the University of Minnesota Duluth. And so far, we've had trainings throughout the state since its development and have trained over 1,250 state agency employees representing 21 different state agencies. I'll pass over the discussion I wanted to highlight around kind of some of our immediate needs related to cultural resources. But I will note that third bullet on that second to last slide there, talking about tribal liaison hires, our executive board, passed a resolution indicating their desire to have the Indian Affairs Council more closely involved in agency hires when related to tribal liaisons. And that's something that certainly we look forward to hopefully participating in and help develop and potentially turn into policy. I want to say miigwech and thank you for the opportunity to address the committee here today, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. And I forgot to ask this question of Ms. Herr, but I'm going to ask it of you, too. Do you see that you play a role in educating members of your community about discrimination issues, and are you a resource for educational materials on that front at all?
Absolutely, and that's the primary reason why I included the slides on the Why Treaties Matter exhibit, as well as the opportunities we have through state agency training. That's certainly one of our large responsibilities, and I take that very seriously. As education is in my background, prior to coming to the Indian Affairs Council, I was the director of the Office of Indian Education at the Minnesota Department of Education, And so I understand the need not only to provide, you know, culturally relevant resources to American Indian K-12 students, but also to all Minnesotans, Indian and non-Indian, to understand each other better. And so we play a primary role in that, and my desire to do so going forward as well.
Great. Thank you. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I may have the most predictable line of questioning of the day, but before I dive in, Mr. Olson, you've got a staff of five?
That's correct.
Okay, you've got a staff of, thank you, Madam Chair, okay. Staff of five. For the 16-17 biennium, you've got $39,000 in IT spend with Minute. That seems pretty high. And I'm just wondering, as I've asked everybody else, I'm sure it seems like Minute has been somewhat prescriptive with you as to what your needs are. Can you please get that to me or us? And then again, same question, what percentage of your space requirements are allocated to Minute?
Mr. Olson, is that something you can get for us?
Madam Chair, Representative, absolutely we can get that to you. And just in full transparency, we have not been coached by Minute or have had discussions about Minute other than the negotiated contracts through smart agencies, but we can definitely provide as much detail as we're able to the committee.
Thank you. Representative.
Madam Chair, thank you. If we could get that soon, that'd be great. Appreciate it.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Olson, thank you so much for your presentation, and just so surprised that you've only been there a couple of months. Just gave such a comprehensive overview. Appreciate it greatly. So in addition to the predictable line of questioning that Representative Nash gave, I would be interested to know what your thoughts are if you know, with regard to the OLA report of 2014. I'm not sure how, to what degree you've reviewed that, but I would be very interested to know how it is that you are reaching out to your constituencies and any measurable outcomes relative to the goals that were established for your council.
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative, and members of the committee, thank you for that question. I certainly was anticipating that. I've reviewed the OLA report thoroughly, and you know, I do know that it ultimately came down to two recommendations, one being recommending that the executive order I referenced, 1310, be actually put into law. That is certainly something that the Indian Affairs Council supports. The one thing I think that I differ in terms of the OLA report opinion is that that does not diminish the authority or the need for the Indian Affairs Council in terms of the role we play for liaison work and for advocacy work on behalf of legislation, both for tribal nations and just for Minnesota in general. I do agree that the council has potentially previously lacked strategic direction. And in my short 2 months here at the council, it is something that I'm looking forward to pursuing here in the near future, is actually going through a strategic plan development process and really zeroing in on particularly our statutory responsibilities. I take very seriously the responsibilities we have, like I mentioned in my presentation, to cultural resources, human remains and burial mound protection. That's something I don't think the story has really been told well enough in terms of just the great responsibility that we have through that. So I'm looking to kind of funnel down really what responsibilities we have statutorily. And although, you know, we are expected and mandated to be out in the committee, I do think that, you know, we need to take opportunities to also be here educating the committee, members of the legislature at large, and Minnesotans at large as well. So I look forward to further addressing those OLA findings, but those are my key two, Representative.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Olson, and Madam Chair, thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions, but maybe we'll talk separately. But I would like to have you reflect a little bit on the appropriations for these grants, 17 grantees in the education programs. Particularly, what are you doing with significant, what do you expect from these groups, and especially the early childhood program?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair and Representative, thank you for the question. This is also one of the things that really keeps me coming to work day in and day out and being so passionate about education. I understand that education really lies for American Indian students in opportunities to learn through that indigenous worldview and through opportunities to learn their native language. There's plenty of research, particularly in the early childhood field, and more is coming every day that shows that, you know, the American Indian students, that American Indian youth that take part in language revitalization or language immersion programs, more specifically at the early childhood level, do well later on in achievement and actually looking forward to kind of some longitudinal studies for graduation. And so we fully support those grant programs. And in early childhood, we have a couple of immersion programs, one in the Leech Lake area, the Negaunee program, the full immersion program. We also have one here in Minneapolis, the Wichoye program. And our grants director and I just had the opportunity to visit them a couple of weeks ago, and what a blessing it was, as I'm a language learner of my own native language as well, seeing young ones being conversational is something that's exciting to me. And so, Representative, I don't know if I fully got to your question, but okay, I appreciate it.
Representative Flanagan. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to make this really quick. So, Mr. Olson, welcome to this role. We're excited to have you here. I did have some questions. I think this council is unique from other councils, as oftentimes we talk about racial and ethnic groups. We have a political identity, right, as Indian people. And so when I look at the board member agencies, representatives from the legislature, the governor's office, who attends those meetings from the executive branch agencies? Is it the actual commissioners themselves or designees?
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, Representative Flanagan, and members of the committee, it's been a mixture, and I do know that that's also been one of the findings in the previous OLA report. I will say recently, and I don't know if it's just kind of a feel of a refresh that now I'm there leading the council, but we have had full attendance of the council from our executive board and primarily commissioners attending. I know historically it's been low attendance and primarily designees. It's my vision that we would have the table once again full of agency head, full of commissioners there as well, because that's really representative of that government-to-government relationship mm-hmm. and discussion.
Representative Flanagan.
And I think that's, thank you, Madam Chair. I think within the spirit of the 1013 and the executive order, and as we're talking about being more intentional in that government-to-government relationship, I think it's fair for the council and for this body to expect that the commissioners would serve themselves with at that table. So, thank you.
Members, I don't see any more questions at this point. And Mr. Olson, we appreciate it, and we look forward to your responses to the questions that were asked here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, what we are going to do tomorrow is we're going to have the Council on Latino Affairs. In your folders, you have that packet. I would ask that you put that into your save file, so that way we don't have to reprint those. And if you've got a neighbor that had to leave early, if you can do that on their behalf as well, take that Council on Latino Affairs folder and put it in their save file. And that way we could save on some paper. So with that, we are adjourned.